just a kid from the neighborhood. You're listening to the 405 Exchange Podcast. My name is Ken Grandpierre, and today's episode is with Arkells. Well, at least with their frontman, Max, who is one of those people who is just born to be a spokesperson, at least in regards to creativity. You see, the thing with Arkells is they're a band that makes sense for 2018, a band that very much is within the now and within the today. And yeah, they're just one of those bands I've grown to love a lot. They're a rock band from Canada that sings just these beautifully powerful anthems that just make you give a shit. And you know, having someone like Max at the forefront, which you'll see within this talk, yeah, it just really does make you want to believe in what they believe in, which is clearly to have a good time above anything else. Yeah, Arkells do an amazing job with their live shows. I highly recommend catching them live if you haven't yet. And a lot of this talk is centered around that, particularly because it greatly inspired their most recent album, Rally Cry, which came out just a couple weeks ago. So yeah, let's jump into this. This is the 405 Exchange with Arkells. Enjoy. You said the past is complicated, both long and celebrated. Take a minute to get fascinated right here, right now, when you're liberated. Relentless, like a dog on a bone. We got gas in the tank to go. So it's good to be here with you again today. You know, one of the things that's really cool about getting to talk to you is I've grown to actually love your band a lot. Because when I think about what a band should be in 2018, I feel like Arkells pretty much hits on it.
What does that mean to you?
In the sense that, like, the songs do have depth to them, but the element of having a good time, the element of rebellion, the element of, like, youthfulness is so intact within what you do. And it's interesting seeing how, like, that's not so much the norm anymore. So seeing that pivot within your songwriting and how the band goes about what it does, it's really refreshing in a way.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, I mean, I think for us, we definitely have a pretty, like, kind of inclusive spirit. I think the songs just generally work better when we play them live, when everybody's involved and singing and it feels connected. I think it's like one of the things I'm constantly trying to do is just like break down the sort of wall between the stage, the metaphorical wall between the stage and the crowd, where it's just like, and kind of get that idea through that this is a communal act.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think I'll take that as a compliment. That's a nice thing to say. Because I think it's one of the services we provide as entertainers is that feeling of sort of being together with other people.
Yeah, and going a little further into that, I think, like, in a distilled way, what I was getting at is the fact that you guys have done a really great job of marrying the element of artistry and being entertainers, as in a way of, like, embracing it, really. Like, it's really refreshing seeing that, like, you've embraced that part.
You know, it's funny, I'm friends with Frank Turner, who's a great songwriter.
Love Frank Turner. Yeah. You guys opened for him when he did his theater run here on the stage.
That's right, yeah. And so, and I was hanging with him recently, and he was talking about the idea of being an entertainer. And sometimes people, maybe that word doesn't have as much cachet versus the word artist, but I think you're both. I think it's like, you know, when you're writing a song or working on a piece of music, you're an artist, but when you are performing those songs, you become an entertainer. You're there for entertainment,
whether you like it or not, just by virtue of, like, the venue, what a venue is, that's what you're doing.
You're on literally a stage, and you're dressing up for it, and stuff, you know, so, and I think that's cool. I embrace that.
Yeah, I'm glad that we hit on that because the latest album, Rally Cry, gets its title from the massive rally show that you guys did.
Sure.
By the way, congratulations
on that.
What a hallmark for the band to achieve.
Yeah, they don't all look like that, but it was a special night.
Can you tell me, like, because I haven't had the chance to talk to you since you guys played that show. I talked to you, like, a couple months previous, but can you go into what that show was like for you and the experience of it, and for our listeners, and especially for our listeners in America and Europe, like, the significance of a show like that for a Canadian band?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think, I think Hamilton as a city is particularly proud of its young artists and young leaders and young people that go out and do stuff in the world, you know? Yeah. I think, so when they see us, like, you know, on Instagram off touring, you know, in Europe or in the States, they're kind of proud of us. So when we come home, it's especially, I think, exciting, you know? And so we, we're very humbled by all of that support. Get on to the next thing.
I really want to ask you about some specific songs, particularly starting out with People's Champ, mm-hmm. which was like the first taste that we got from the album. That track is such an anthem, and it's almost hard to imagine it being written and recorded in a room in a very like structured and traditional sense. So describe to me what it was like capturing that anthem spirit within a room. Because you've touched on that already, but like that's a tune where it's almost hard to picture.
Yeah, you know what's funny? It's that song came together pretty quickly. It was the first song we recorded from the record,
yeah.
And it was fun. It was that one was like kind of some songs reveal themselves pretty quickly, and even in its early stages when you are, you know, just like sitting at a piano at home, you can kind of hear parts. I think that's the thing about when you're songwriting, you're like, oh yeah, this chorus is going to be a sing-along call, a callback, and you're probably going to need to have a bunch of voices in the room. And then Tony, our keyboardist, you know, it's like, oh, what if the horns go, dum, da 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 da, and you're like, oh yeah, that sounds cool. You know, you start referencing things. So there's definitely some songs that you can just kind of imagine what it will sound like, and you're kind of chasing that part of your imagination.
Do you know, going into that, and I really been mean to ask you this, especially because I loved Knocking on the Door so much. Mm. I think what made that track such a standout is the fact that you have the elements further to just being a traditional band that you got to play with. You got to play with horns, you got to play with backing vocals more.
Yeah.
And seeing how that was utilized on Rally Cry, how is that like, knowing that you have those at your arsenal?
Yeah, I think for us it's definitely widened the scope of what our band can be. You know, we tour for some of the bigger shows with a horn section and some singers.
Yeah.
And it makes it that much more fun because you can just do more. And I think for us, that's one of the tricks is like, how do you keep being a rock band fresh in 2018? You know, there's been, rock music's been around for a while now, and I think there's a lot of great, like, adventurous music out there that doesn't exist in rock music, so you kind of are looking around and go, okay, how do they do it? And honestly, a lot of times we just think, like, what would Kanye West do in this situation? Like, he's such a good producer, and the way, like, the bridge in Knocking at the Door just changes time signature,
yeah,
or the tempo, I should say.
It was really sneaky how you guys did that, by the way.
Yeah, and that's sort of like, that's kind of what Kanye would do. He'd just, like, cut it and go into a different part.
You know, the element of the backing singers kind of remind me a bit of when I saw Nine Inch Nails, not on this most recent tour, but the one like back in 2013-14. They had backing singers on tour with them for the first time.
Oh, cool.
And seeing them tour that way, it just added a completely new dimension to songs that they've had for like decades.
Oh, yeah. It's just how you can like layer the vocals and the scope of like, yeah, how vocals can sound really make a difference if there's more singers.
Yeah, okay. I want to go back to the album. I found the video clip that you guys released for American Scream to be quite clever. And musically speaking, this one is quite different to what most people would expect from you. Do you think that's fair to say?
Kind of. Yeah, it's funny. It's like sometimes when we put out something new, they go, oh, disco, like, because it kind of has a disco feel to it. In my mind, I'm like, oh, I've always liked that, though. But then I just realized, I guess we don't have any songs that quite sound like that. Okay, fair enough. Yeah. You know what I mean? But it's, for us, most of the musical moments that happen on the record are things we've been thinking about for a while. So in our minds, they don't feel that new, necessarily. But to a listener who's maybe familiar with a certain set of songs of ours, they might go, oh, that sounds pretty different. And then we go, oh, yeah, I guess it does.
Yeah. And there's also a funny lyric video that you have up online with that. I'm sure people will be checking that out. I really want to know, how long did it take to actually film that? Because it's like sped up.
Oh, yeah, I think we were standing around in that thing for like half an hour.
Just half an hour?
Yeah, it wasn't that long. You can change the speed that okay, the camera can. You can go super fast, like squirrely mode, or you can do it a little slower. So
I feel like I've been tricked. I almost thought it was like an hour long or something.
Not even 45 minutes or something. Yeah.
I really want to ask about Only for a Moment, because that track feels really timeless. And one of the things I really love about your band is I feel like that's the aim without being. How would I frame this? I feel like you aim to make songs timeless without being bothered where or not they are. Like, it's not like it's the mandate, but I feel like in that song you really achieved that, and it showcases how much there's so much variations to the way you write music. So did this one feel like a bit of a creative turning point?
I think for us, like, we're always trying to have, I'd say for the most part, our songs are pretty transferable to just a simple acoustic guitar or just a piano, and if a song can hold up on, you know, on just like one instrument and you can be like sung around a campfire or something, then that's maybe, that's a pretty good indicator that the song's good and like has maybe a timeless quality. So that's what we strive for. And I think for a song like that, the trick is like, how do you make something that kind of feels maybe timeless, but then also has like, feels like it exists in 2018. So I think for us, like, that was definitely the goal. It's just like, okay, this has like a Fleetwood Mac vibe to it, to my ears, but then how do we make it not sound like Fleetwood Mac? You know what I mean? Like, how do you like...
How do you make it not sound too on the nose?
Yeah.
Something impressive to me about the album as well is the fact that it doesn't overstay its welcome. And I feel like that's something that's kind of hard to achieve when you consider where music is now, where it almost feels like people don't know where they want their albums to be a specific length, or they don't want it to be too long or too short. And I feel like a track like Relentless is a prime example of a track that specifically doesn't overstay its time. And I think it's fair to say that's my favorite track of the album, Relentless. Yeah. What was it like to make the track that the way you did? And do you feel like the way the album flows was very intentional for you?
Yeah, I think you're onto something there. Like, this record is very, I think, very focused. Like, I think it's every part has like a purpose. There's not too much meandering. It's 10 songs. You know, a song like Relentless is like just over 3 minutes. It's like we kind of didn't want to kind of like cut the fat on a lot of the songs. Like, if it didn't really, if it's not really hitting hard, then we would have chopped it, you know?
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I think for me, as a music listener lately, I've really come to enjoy shorter records. I think just as like a listening experience, to know that you can like get through something within like 40 minutes is like, was appealing. Yeah. And we might get to a point where we're like, we need to do an opus or something. But for now, for now, it felt like, I don't know, 10 songs, I think it's like 38 minutes. I was like, that's it, that feels cool.
Yeah, and I even think about like last week, Vince Staples just dropped a record. It's only 22 minutes long, which is insane.
Yeah, you can do, I mean, the Pusha T record, which I love, Daytona, that's only 23 minutes. It's like 7 songs.
That was a damn great record, wasn't it?
Great record. And the Kanye record, Yay, which I love, that's only 7 songs. Yeah. You know, it's like, I was like, I'm kind of loving like these experiences. And so, and honestly, so when I see some records that are like 18, 21 songs, like one of the Drake stuff is, like, when I look at the track list, I'm just man, there's a lot of songs. Like, it just feels kind of intimidating to me. Like,
like, as a music fan, me personally, I feel like it almost asks too much of the listener. Do you feel that way?
Yeah. And by the way, it's not to say that like I don't particularly like EPs. When I see something like 3 or 4 songs, I'm like, I don't love that either. But I do think there's a sweet spot there.
I definitely agree with that. Talk to me a bit about the video for Relentless, because I think that is a very, I mean, one, of course, is very well made, but I feel like it does a good job of touching upon what the band's about in a weird way.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we put the vision in the hands of Mark Myers, who's a great director. He did Knock at the Door. And, you know, there's just a couple of, like, touchdowns where, like, it feels like it has to be dark. Like, Relentless has, like, a nighttime vibe to it, to me, at least. Yeah, how do you make it kind of weird and visually interesting? Music videos to me are a bit of a mystery as to like what makes it good, but it's one of those things where it's like when you see it, you see it.
Yeah.
And like music video doesn't necessarily like have to hit you on the head in like a literal sense, but it needs to make you feel good and like the song that much more.
Yeah.
And I think the video does that.
You know, a good example to me, and they opened up for you guys, to the Rally Cold War Kids. They always have fantastic videos that correlate so nicely to their music, but it's hard to pinpoint what exactly it is.
Yeah, it's weird. It's like this weird alchemy of like what the song sounds like and what the band's image is, and you know, there's it's a bit of a mystery.
Who else? It was Cold War Kids and Bishop Briggs at Rally, right?
Yeah.
Was there anyone else?
Elevator, which is a great local band.
Oh, nice one. Yeah. Awesome. Dude, I still can't believe that you guys did that.
Like, no, us neither.
Yeah, because it's like just a couple days ago when I knew I was going to talk to you, I like found myself watching some of the videos, especially after like living with the album for a bit, and just seeing the scope of people and just seeing how you're running towards it.
Yeah, it was fun. It was cool to be in a stadium rock band for a night. It was cool.
Yeah, like as someone who's never going to experience that, what is even going on in your mind when you're running down a catwalk like that?
Yeah, it's a little overwhelming, but it's a, you know, we've, the nice thing is that we have played bigger shows, nothing that quite that big, yeah. But it's not like we had only played 200 capacity shows and then had to do that. You know what I mean? Like, we've been able to scale our band and build towards something bigger, yeah. Like over the years. So it's like, you know, we'd done Budweiser Stage in Toronto, which is like an amphitheater, and we headlined that, and that was 16,000 people. So like, we had some experience playing with for bigger crowds.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. Going back to the album, I really wanted to ask you as well about Hand Me Downs, and I feel like that's going to become like a future fan favorite. The songwriting here to me is like quite trademark Arctels, and yeah. It's funny, when we were talking about Relentless just tonight, when you said it has a nighttime vibe to it, it kind of makes me think of a Saturday night, like yeah. Kind of getting ready, going out, and that vibe of just like, I'm going to go out to a place and have a great time. And I feel like Hand Me Downs has that while being very sentimental at the same time, especially from a lyrical standpoint. Mm-hmm. Was that a very different type of song for you to write lyrically?
You know, it kind of felt like Leather Jacket Part 2 to me or something, our other song. In that, it sort of has like a joyful musical quality and a sing-along quality to it, but then there's also like an underlying sadness to it, yeah. Because you're talking about someone who's going through a bit of a struggle,
yeah.
And I always like that combination of something that feels somewhat joyful, but then also like has a tinge of sadness. That was one of the last songs we wrote on the record, and it was definitely, I think to me, like immediately was like, oh, this is, I think, gonna be, as you say, like a fan favorite and yeah. Gonna be important.
When you said that just now, like that hint of sadness, it kind of reminds me of the vivid nature of the song, and I feel like that's something that's very big for you as from a songwriting standpoint, that when people are listening to the music, you very much want them to have a vivid picture.
Yeah, I think for us it's like trying just to paint little scenes, and those little scenes can often tell a bigger story. So it's like if you're talking about, you know, somebody who's acting a little bit reckless, or you're pointing to a relationship they have in their life that might let the listener know something else is going on.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the tricks of storytelling is like not spelling it out for the listener, but just pointing to little details, yeah. And then letting the listener figure it out for themselves.
I like that. You're currently on tour with St. Lucia. We talked about that a little bit before hit the recorder. They're another incredible band on stage. I wonder, what's it been like not just perform with them, but to watch them every night?
They're great. You know, it's like every great band that we tour with, we're always taking notes. So there's always like, there's always a lot of conversation with like, oh, you see what they did there? Oh, see how they pulled that trick off? Because I think a lot of being in a band is just like recognizing the little tricks that other bands have,
yeah.
And then stealing those tricks.
That's a good way to put it. What I think is really fitting with the way that you guys play and the way they play is that it's very much like one of those things where every band member is so crucial to live performance. Mm-hmm. I bring that up in the sense that there are some shows you watch where the guitarist is clearly just the guitarist and the drummer is clearly just the drummer. But with you and St. Lucia, I feel it's like so much more than that, and the way the bands contribute to the live show.
Oh yeah, I mean, the whole band is amazing. They're all amazing musicians. And that's what makes them really great is that their musical acumen is very high. Like those guys, the three of them I know all met like in jazz school, and like, yeah. Even though they're playing electronic music, like they're pulling off like some very interesting and like highly proficient musical moves.
Yeah, and John is such a dude.
He's awesome. John's a great songwriter too.
Yeah. I only have a couple more questions for you. Thanks for finding the time to chat with me today. Yeah. I really appreciate it. I didn't get a chance to ask at the start, but was Rally Cry the title inspired from the actual Rally show, or did that?
It all kind of tied together because Rally Cry is the lyric in Relentless.
Yeah.
And I liked that expression. And then we're like, oh, what if we call the show the Rally? Like, gave it a name because that's more fun.
Yeah.
And then naming a record's always impossible, but when we were working on Relentless, I was like, what if we just call the record Rally Cry? And everyone's like, yeah. Like, typically, naming a record requires, like, a long email thread and 600 ideas that mean something different to each guy in the band.
Like, weeks and months of talking.
Painful, but this one was very easy.
Yeah. And normally, I wouldn't ask something like this. Like, this is not the type of thing I find any interest in, but there's something very interesting about the nice jacket you have. Where did that come from?
Oh, the black one?
Yeah, the black one with the frills on it.
We wanted to do something, I don't know, a little more bold than normal, even though I have a pretty good selection of bold jackets. And there's a local designer from Toronto and she showed us this like cowboy jacket that she had made, and it was brown. It was like kind of a light brown, but it had the tassels on it.
Yeah.
And then we're like, oh, that's sick. I've never had anything, you know, it looks cool when you lift your arms up.
Yeah.
But I was like, what if we did black with like rainbow, because it was Pride weekend, the weekend the rally was happening.
Oh, okay.
So we're like, oh, it might be a nice little nod to that. Oh, and then she made it. I was like, this is amazing. And it started to become like a signature thing. Actually, I'll show you something funny. Yesterday at the show in Philly.
Were you wearing it?
No, I wasn't wearing it, but then somebody made shirts.
Oh, no. Because
there's a mural up in Toronto.
Yeah.
Of like this is the mural in Toronto that people can take a photo. It's like on a wall.
That's and beautiful.
So people made shirts of the mural.
That is so wicked. Yeah. We'll definitely have to include that in the article. That's massive. Look at that.
Yeah.
Before I let you go here, you know, obviously what's ahead of the band is more live shows. I mean, clearly. But tell me, after touring for so long and after playing a show like the Rally, how do you see the live show evolving for ourselves? I mean, we've talked about horns, we've talked about backing singers, and obviously scale is one thing, but like playing live is so crucial for you guys. What do you want to do next with it?
I mean, I think it's just like a matter of building on our, you know, our toolkit, you know, like when it comes to the things we can do live. It's like kind of building upon what we have already. When I see someone like Springsteen, I guess what I mean to say is that he's been just building up little tricks over the last 4 decades, where it's like, depending on the night of the week, oh, I can lean on this song, or I can lean on this bit.
Yeah.
And so for, I think that's a cool thing about putting a new record, is that you go, okay, there's like 10 new opportunities here in these songs to be able to like offer something new and interesting to the current set list.
Yeah.
So it's like, oh, there's going to be a sing-along moment here, or like maybe we can extend the outro here and do a thing, or maybe there's a piano solo on this part. So it's like the songs end up sort of taking on a life of their own.
Yeah.
And you don't know what that life's going to look like until you start playing them.
Yeah.
So
until you have some years as well.
Yeah, exactly. So I don't know exactly. It's funny to know where these songs like end up in people's lives and where they end up in our set list, you know.
Yeah.
But time will tell.
But it's interesting, because what you effectively just kind of described is having your arc of your career reflected within your live show, because I imagine something that's a big treat for people to see people like Springsteen or Billy Joel or even Elton John. He's playing some shows here in New York this week. Is that people go to the shows and they'll remember like the era of that album or the time that album came out. And imagine that's something you would love to achieve.
Oh, totally. And that's another thing, is like, you know, people are discovering our band every day, and it's funny. It's like oftentimes the record that people like most of ours is the one that hit them at a pivotal time, or when they first got introduced. So it's like, it's like, I love this record. I love High Noon because I was going through a breakup, and or whatever, you know. And that's cool. I love the fact that like we can enter people's lives and we don't even know it.
How does it make you feel knowing that? Because we've talked a lot about how much you love music, and we talked about like, you know, Kanye and like Vince Staples and people that we like. But like the fact that people see your band live and might not even know your band, because it might be brought by like a friend or a significant other, and then go on Spotify and then actually listen to the album. Like, it's kind of a meta thing to ask, but what's it feel like knowing that's happening, like right now?
It's cool. I mean, with social media, you kind of get a bit of a sense. You're like, if someone's tweeting, oh, I like this song or whatever, but it still hits me in a great way. Like when you just meet somebody at a show who like tells you something kind of personal about like whatever the band means to them.
Yeah.
And you don't know that necessarily until someone tells you. So it's cool. Like, I don't know. I always get a kick out of it.
You know what's meta about what you just said is at the hotel that we're at right now, a couple months back, actually this time last year, we recorded a talk with K-Flay. And around that time she was touring, she was putting out these books on the merch table, telling fans to write like stories of their past or things that they're going through. And then she made it as a merch item called Crush Me Books, where it was like pretty much diary entries from fans correlating their experiences with her songs.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
That's a great, she's awesome. We're pals.
Are you? Yeah. I actually didn't know.
Yeah. Uh-huh. We hung with her.
She's one of those absurdly honest people.
Oh, she's so smart too. Yeah. She's like wickedly smart.
Yeah, I know I said last question, but actually this will be the last question, and then you'll be able to run. But later on today, you guys are doing something kind of cool in New York. You want to describe what it is?
Yeah, we're going down to Sid Gold's piano request room.
Yeah.
Because we had a day off. We're like, it'd be kind of fun if we just had like a little sing-song. We've done it before. We did it in England, and it was a good time.
Yeah.
And
was that the first time you did it in England?
Yeah, and then we did a little pop-up at Union Station in Toronto, and that was cool.
That's awesome.
So I'm like, oh yeah, because we're going to Elton John tonight. So it's just down the street. So like, let's do that, and then we'll go there.
That's gonna be awesome.
Yeah.
Well, dude, thanks so much for catching
up.
I'm looking forward to when you guys headline again. Like when you guys played Barry Barham back. Was it last year?
Yeah, this time last year.
Oh shit! Yeah, that was so much fun.
That was a good one. Yeah, we'll be back in March. I think end of March.
Looking forward to
the date. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.